City and all over South Africa have been gathering since the news of his death just before midnight their time. As you can hear, singing, dancing, celebrating the life of the man who for nearly three decades symbolised the struggle of black people against white oppression in South Africa from his prison cell and went on to lead his country away from apartheid. Fiona Ford is outside his home for us this morning. Fiona, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gavin.
Describe what you can see and hear there.
What we have to one side is the Houghton residence in which Mr. Mandela has been living for quite a number of years and where he passed away suddenly at 10 to 9 last night. And immediately behind me, we have about 200 to 300 people who've been gathered here for quite some time. They're singing, they're chanting, they're praying, they're celebrating. Though it is a very sad occasion, it feels and it sounds quite joyous here this morning while they remember a man, what the man called the father of the nation.
But nothing had the impact on me of meeting Mandela.
So. And there was the crossover with sport. One of the most iconic images of him is from the 1995 World Cup.
Yeah, the image is iconic, but really the significance was far greater because when the ANC decided to use sport to try and develop, build the relationship between the various parties in the country, and the ANC moved quickly on that. And the most significant move was the symbol, the Springbok jersey and the Springbok on the South African shirt, because that was the symbol of what a lot of black people saw as the white oppressors. And Mandela urged them to keep the Springbok emblem. Now, most wanted it removed. They saw it as a symbol of hate, you know. And
yes, because for Afrikaners, it was a symbol of pride for them.
Yeah, because whites only were allowed to represent South Africa, just for younger people to know that. And the national flower, the Protea, was adopted by cricket. But then the country's Olympic Committee took the Protea. But Mandela told the rugby, you know, keep the Springbok. And it won him deep affection across racial lines, particularly amongst the Afrikaner community, at a time when they were very suspicious of what the black-led future held for them. Now, South Africa famously then won the World Cup in 95. It was seen as the biggest moment in pulling the country together. And the captain of the team, Francois Pienaar, had dealt with Mandela in advance of it and planned it and became a close friend of Mandela.
We adopted a motto, one team, one country, because we realised that this competition is for everyone in South Africa. And to do well in this competition will make everyone in South Africa proud. We underestimated how proud it would make South Africa. And during the Rugby World Cup, my phone would ring, my mobile phone, it would be Madiba, wanting to chat to me to find out, you know, what's happening, is the team focused, are they okay, you know, are the guys cool? And that to me is just, it's just amazing. You know, he had the time and the presence of mind to phone and say, guys, you know, we're all there behind you. And that meant so much. It's a small thing, but it meant a lot. It's been well documented, my feelings on what happened that day of the final, when I actually walked into the changing room and Madiba stood there wearing a Springbok on his heart. That was an incredibly emotional moment for me in my life, and I just couldn't sing our anthem because I was just too emotional. I was so proud to be a South African, and that sense actually prevailed in the changing room, where all the players just looked at this man who took time out again to come into the changing room and to wish us good luck. And when we walked out of the stadium, the sounds of Madiba, Nelson, 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 reverberating around that stadium was just it's very powerful. When Madiba handed the trophy to me, I shook his hand and he said to me, thank you for what you've done for South Africa. I said to him, no, Madiba, you've got it wrong. Thank you for what you've done for South Africa. And I felt like hugging him. You know, I really felt like giving him a bit.
Ireland and South Africa are far apart geographically, but Dunn Stores on Henry Street in Dublin became a part of the struggle against apartheid on the 19th of July 1984, when a young member of staff began a protest against white rule that was to make headlines around the world. The woman who began that protest is Mary Manning, and she's on the phone now. Mary, good morning.
Morning. Hi, Harry.
What happened on that day, and why did you do what you did?
Well, first of all, I didn't actually start the process of the protest. What it was, our union had brought in a policy at the AGM at Easter of that year, and they had filtered it down to all the shop stewards. And Karen Guerin, the shop steward for Dunn's and Henry Street, told the union members in the store. Then we then went around looking to see what was actually from South Africa, because none of us knew anything about really what was going on. It was more because it was union policy, and we had so much hassle in Dunn's at the time. And for the next 2 days, then, the Dunn's management intimidated us, tried to make us change our mind and tried to make us say that we would handle the South African goods. And as a result, on the 19th of July, they put anybody who had said that they were going to continue to refuse to handle the goods onto checkouts with management behind them. And as soon as someone came up to the register, it happened to be mine, and when I said that I couldn't handle the goods, my register was closed off and I was brought up to the office.
And you then were suspended?
Yeah, I was given 5 minutes to make up my mind. I told it was going to be severe discipline reaction if it continued. And Karen, who was the shop steward at the time, was brought up with me, but we were separated then. And after 5 minutes, she was brought back in and said no, I was going to continue to refuse to handle the goods. And I was told I was suspended from then.
And you and other workers, 10 of you in all, went on strike effectively. Against what had happened to over what had happened to you, and that continued for over 2.5 years. You were on strike pay until the government prohibited the sale of African fruit and South African vegetables and fruit in Ireland. So on this morning, when this struggle that you were a part of, and as I say, that got so many headlines, and that the man who became the first democratically elected leader of South Africa, thanks in part to your protest, there were many others obviously, what do you feel about Nelson Mandela and what he achieved?
I think, well, first of all, I just think it's a very sad day, even though he had been sick for such a long time. I think it's just, the world is also a great man. He was just an inspiration for so many admired what he was doing.
Incredible enthusiasm for him. I think it's very important for us, I think, in recalling the life of Nelson Mandela, to remember the period that he spent in isolation, locked away, the great courage that was necessary to look at history that seemed to be so hopeless and so divisive and so cruel in the apartheid times, but to say that one was not only going to work against it, but one was going to think one's way past it. And to think one's way past it with an extraordinary forgiveness. And I was very sad, obviously, and I so understand the people of South Africa and all those who know of his example in the world wanting him to go on. But his example will go on, and his example is a very, very powerful one. There was a great quietness to him, too. I think, for example, those who will remember the reception in Dublin will remember the references to the Irish soccer team. And that was fascinating, was how the person of Nelson Mandela was able to cross generations in its welcome to generous thought. But those days, I think, when the anti-apartheid movement was starting off, the work of Carter Asmal and Louise and Pat Carroll and Joan and all of those people who were setting up, if you like, support systems for Mandela's struggle. It's very important to remember that it wasn't easy. There were days, I recall, spending outside shops and outside sports grounds with in the wet and the rain. I remember poor Noel Brown being part of it, so many others. And it was a small group that turned into, now I think, then people saw, it revealed to the world the horror of apartheid and racism. And I think then as well, what's wonderful thing now, I think as well, and my thoughts are with them too, with those great young women, Mary Manning and Catherine O'Reilly and Karen and Liz Deese and these others who took the only means they had, their job, and they offered it in support of Mandela. And I think it was the most time I saw him being emotional was when he was thanking them and thanking the trade unionists who later came to support them so strongly.
That's right. We were standing on the steps, and he turned to me and he said, "Mary, you know, there was a time when they called me a terrorist." And of course, he had taken up arms, but he also learned in prison, and he spoke about this a little. You know, I have learned that what you have to do is reconcile and reconcile and shake the hand of those who are on the other side. And I think that's very important for Africa, even for my current work as Special Envoy in the Great Lakes.
Most recently, or in recent years, he invited you, I think, to become one of the elders, this group of former state leaders.
Yes, and I remember, you know, wondering, how is it a bit arrogant to say, you know, elders for the world? But when we met Nelson Mandela, it was in May 2007 at a planning meeting, and then we were launched in July. But at that planning meeting in South Africa, we heard him coming because we heard the singing. The whole of the, you know, the Africans were out, you know, the South African people who were working in this place where we were.
This is where?
Ulasaba. It's a place that Richard Branson has in a kind of lovely part of the park area of the, you know, and with wild
animals. In South Africa.
In South Africa. And he came in on the arms of Graça Machel, who was also going to be one of the elders, and Archbishop Tutu, our chair. And he sat around a table and he had that very strong voice, and he, you know, told us to be independent, to speak out against injustice, but also to be humble and to listen. He said, those in places that you go to will know more than you do. Listen to them. Reach out to those who are marginalised. Reach out to young people. And then at the end, the protocol, if you like, was that we would go out and there were chairs and the elders would be photographed with Nelson Mandela and then others could join. Not at all. As soon as Madiba went out the door, everybody gathered round, all the local staff, all the local people there, and they were singing. And he was as happy. He sat on a chair, and Archbishop Tutu threw himself at his feet on the ground. Jimmy Carter threw himself. I threw myself. So the elders were sort of spread on the ground at his feet, and the local people were the ones, you know, surrounding. And that was good. That was somehow symbolic.
What makes him such an inspiring figure to so many, not just in his own country?
That he lived the values he talked about, absolutely lived them. His long walk to freedom, the struggle that he made, the reconciling, the peace that he made. I mean, when he came out of prison, he wouldn't negotiate until he came out of prison. So instead of the apartheid government being able to somehow manipulate him, he completely controlled the discussion of forming a government. And so he was very strong, but he was also very human. He, you know, before he married Graça Machel in later life, I mean, when I would meet him, like, he was a great flirt. I had a very attractive Indian South African staffer with me when I went to see him in his home, in fact, with my son Aubrey and Aubrey's girlfriend at the time. And as soon as he saw, she had been with him as a junior staffer before she joined the Office of High Commissioner. And he turned around and said, "Ah, I remember you now," says he, with a, you know, looking at her with full approval. And but he was also, so at that meeting, I remember he thumped the chair and said, "This war in Iraq is terrible. This should not happen. I have been trying to phone President Bush." I mean, he was very, very angry about what was happening. So it's the values that inspired his country to be the Rainbow Nation. If only we could become a rainbow world.
You were invited back by the foundation set up in his memory before he died. And you spoke in South Africa last year about the task that remains to be done. And there are many people who feel Nelson Mandela achieved one big thing. But there are several other big things in terms of justice, equality, in terms of the well-being of his people, not achieved.
It was a tough assignment because I was asked to speak about justice and peace that are in South Africa and giving the Nelson Mandela lecture in August 2012. And I felt, I said, the true friend is the friend that tells you what you need to know, not just what you want to hear. And, you know, I talked about education, that, you know, that's key. And in South Africa, there's such a lack of quality and access to good education, but also the divides, the economic divides. And it was a tough speech. It was very, very well received. I remember
at the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio.
Des, thank you very much. 17 minutes to nine. Let's go back to South Africa to hear from someone else who met Nelson Mandela. Carol Sithole's grandfather, James Sebe Moroka, is a former president of the ANC, the African National Congress, and she recently brought her family to visit Mandela's home in Houghton. There, she and her son, Vuvu, spoke to RTE's Fran McNulty, and Carol talked first about her meetings with Nelson Mandela.
When he came out of prison, he went to my grandfather's grave because he had already passed on, and he wanted to see where we laid my grandfather to rest. So he has come to visit us at home. You know, we have encountered with him before in that manner. And, you know, I know that the nation is touched, South Africa is touched, the whole world is touched, and we're very, very grateful for the support that the whole world is giving us right now.
When you think of Mandela, what do you think?
Hero. Hero. And I hope that there'll be other Mandelas to come. He has opened doors for South Africa, and some of us are living that dream that he dreamt of. I'm grateful to God to have kept him alive this long in order for him to have spent 27 years in prison, but to have seen the result of what he fought for. So we'll always be grateful, I think, to God more than everyone else in this world.
What do you think of when you think of Mandela?
To me, Nelson Mandela is just a person who just came from the heavens just to come and save our nation that was in trouble, that didn't have any colour, and he just came with his crayons and started colouring in.
That's what you think he did?
Yeah. And mostly...
It's 10 to 9. You're listening to Morning Ireland on the day the world mourns the great statesman of the 20th century, Nelson Mandela. Let's go back to South Africa, where we can talk to Aubrey Mashiki. He's a former member of the ANC and now a political analyst. Mr. Mashiki, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
And your own memories of Nelson Mandela today?
Well, my earliest memory, actually, is a memory about my parents. When I was a child, we had just received a banned copy of an LP by Miriam Makeba and Harry Belafonte. And there were many songs there about Robben Island, Nelson Mandela, Walter Sisulu, Robert Sobukwe, and others. And as a child, I did not know who these people were. I did not know what this Robben Island was about. And as each track was playing, my parents explained the significance of Nelson Mandela in relation to the liberation struggle. But of course, as a young activist in the 80s, we did not have any memory at all. What we had was a likeness of him. And when he was released in 1990, we realized that actually the likeness of Nelson Mandela that was published in the 80s bore no resemblance to him.
Was it a shock then to you to see the man who you had seen a likeness of as a young and passionate advocate of the anti-apartheid movement to emerge from jail essentially as an old man?
Actually, it wasn't a shock because I did not see him as an old man. He had a remarkable presence. I remember the first time I was in the same room with him as a government official. And upon entering the room, the first thing that I did was to cry, and I still don't know why I cried.
Aubrey, we've heard from outside his home this morning, hundreds of people singing, crying, celebrating his life, from world leaders talking about his unique place in world history. But to whom, if anyone, does Nelson Mandela and his memory belong to?
Well, I think his memory belongs to humanity, because his loss is not only a loss to his immediate family. Nelson Mandela was part of the extended family of 52 million South Africans and 7 billion people all over the world.
Will his memory be spread out, or is there a danger, as has been discussed in the lead up to his death, that there will be a clamour to claim his memory amongst either certain members of his family or certain members of the ANC? How dignified is this passing and this memory going to be?
Well, I did fear that during the election campaign for next year's general election, different political parties would use him as a tool against one another. Now that he has passed on before the election, I think the country will go into a period of reflection about what he meant to us as a country and what he meant to us in our public space and our private space.
President Obama used a version of what's said in Ireland when a great person dies, ní bhéidh leithéid de rís ann, when he said last night, "We will not likely see the likes of Nelson Mandela again." To end, let's listen to the voice we have lost.
I stand before you filled with deep pride and joy. pride in the ordinary, humble people of this country. You have shown such a calm, patient determination to reclaim this country as your own, from the rooftops, free at last.